2FM.
Thanks to Johnny B and Afric. It's Wednesday, the 5th of July, and this is Game On. Well, coming up today, we'll hear from Vera Powell and Katie McCabe on that athletic article, as well as tomorrow's World Cup farewell against France. Fergal Brennan brings us the transfer latest news from across the water with more big moves today. And in ladies football, Michelle Ryan discusses the pairings for the All-Ireland quarterfinals, plus male solidarity for the latest protest. We'll also check in with Ireland's head coach as the Women's Softball World Cup comes to Ireland. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome along. I'm delighted to say that Rebecca Craig joins me in studio. How are you, Rebecca? Are you looking forward to seeing the French tomorrow?
I am indeed, yeah. Should be a good old game, but it's between the two.
Yeah, they're the team that I'm looking forward to seeing. Well, I would be looking forward to seeing most in the World Cup. I love watching the French, but seeing them in Dublin in the flesh now is going to be really exciting.
Yeah, most definitely. Got a wealth of amazing players within the squad, you know, and obviously having the likes of Renard back in there as well. It'll be interesting to see her in the flesh.
Now, we have a lot to get through before we get to the match preview. I'm delighted to say that Tony O'Donoghue is with us as well. You're very welcome, Tony.
Thank you very much. I'm here in Tallaght Stadium, outside the stadium. France are still inside, actually, training. So, yeah, I got a chance to see those stars up close and personal.
Very good. Lucky you. I'm a bit jealous of you now, Tony. I will see them tomorrow, though, because we do have the game here on this programme. Tony, before we get into the French and how impressive they could potentially be, I want to talk to you about Vera Powell. So over the last couple of days, she has hit the headlines again. She featured in an athletic article that once again detailed the relationship she had with some of the Houston Dash players and the negative spotlight that they shone on her. She's been accused in the broad sense of mistreating players, but she has very much denied that. You were at the press conference today, Tony. How did this play out?
Yeah, she has denied any allegations made against her previously in December, of course, but this rather lengthy article, I think it was 7,500 words, the journalist from The Athletic talked to seven former staff and players. There were three staff and four players, and there was further allegations, which once again, as you say, Vera Powell strenuously denied. Now, I spoke to her in the team hotel yesterday, and she had said at that stage that she wasn't going to say anything. She wasn't going to address it because she said, you know, the more you speak about it, the more it's in the public agenda. And I will never win for a lie, she said. But today, you could say she came out fighting again because she did state her case. She spoke about the support that she's been getting. She said that she sent 12 testimonies to The Athletic from people that have coached with her in the past or who have been, along her coaching journey. And yet she said that The Athletic didn't publish those, and she felt that was unfair. And she went so far as to say she felt that certain people had an agenda against her personally. She spoke about a person called Barbara Berend, who was mainly involved in uncovering abuses in gymnastics in the Netherlands. And she sent her a note to say, "Dear Vera, I don't put my hands in the fire for anyone, but for you and your pedagogue." You see, I can't even pronounce that word, for, you know, to do with childcare. If you're being responsible interaction with players, I do that 100%. I know from so many players how important you are, have been for them outside the field. You go beyond everything to choose the best for a person. Everyone can learn something from that. You can't defend yourself against a lie. We will cheer for you this summer. So that was an indication. She decided to share that with us, of the support she's getting from people who have, been involved themselves in controversial elements of sport. So, you know, it's a difficult one. It's, you know, the sources in The Athletic have remained anonymous. So it's almost like an interpretation of, you know, what is your truth? You know, is this what you felt at the time? I mean, Vera will say that, you know, she's Dutch and she can be quite direct. Katie McCabe, speaking from the stage today, said as well that, you know, we've argued. She pushes me, I push her. We've clashed many times, but we do what's best for Ireland and the national team. So there is a sense of, you know, there is a bit of abrasiveness in Powell's relationships with teams at times, perhaps. But she says this is almost sexist. She said, you know, if this was Pep Guardiola, Louis van Gaal, Jose Mourinho, none of this would be even an issue. She denies any physical abuse. She said she did sometimes when they didn't have the actual machines, as it were. She took the pulse of players, but not before asking them, obviously. So it's almost down to a question of, do you believe Vera and her interpretation of it, or do you not? And perhaps until, you know, those anonymous sources, the players and the staff of Houston Dash from the 2018 season come forward, this will continue to dog her. And I mean, in terms of the timing of it, it's really unfortunate. I mean, you know, this is the eve of the send-off game. You know, it should be a celebration. And this story is going to follow her to Australia and maybe follow her career for as long as she stays in the game. Is there so much she can do about it? And she, as I say, is claiming that there's an agenda. There's somebody who has targeted her and tried to destroy her career. And you'd have to say, if this continues to re-emerge, it can't be good for her.
Tony, how have the FAI reacted to all of this?
Well, back in December and again yesterday, they were very quick to issue a statement supporting her and I suppose just saying, you know, we're all preparing for the World Cup. There is a school of thought that suggests that perhaps they should be more proactive, maybe getting a third party involvement. You know, I mean, obviously, if you know, it's like a teacher in school. If you ask the class, do you like me? You know, the teacher is the person in the position of power. They're probably going to say yes. Should there be something independent where those questions are asked of the players in a safe environment? But then, having said that, there's been no question that the Irish players or staff have felt any of anything like some of the allegations that were made in the article in The Athletic.
Okay, Tony, I do have a clip from Vera Powell and Katie McCabe from earlier today. Let's hear it.
Vera, do you want to answer the allegations that arose again this week regarding your time in America and accusations that you acted improperly?
I think it's the same story as in December. It is something of a few anonymous players, and how can you defend yourself against a lie? I decided to read out one comment that I received. It is from the Netherlands. It's from Barbara Baren. She is the key person who wrote about all the abuse in gymnastics, and she sent me this yesterday. I've translated it and I've asked her if I could use it. I don't put my hands in the fire for anyone, but for you and your pedagogically responsible interaction with players, I do that 100%. I know from so many players how important you are or have been for them inside and outside the pitch. You go beyond everything to choose the best for a person. Everyone can learn something from that. You can't defend yourself against a lie. And that's all I want to say. We are going to a World Cup. We have done phenomenally with this team, and we have never been able to do that if our bond with each other would have been so strong and so positive. And so that's all I want to say.
But it's going to be brought up again. This is your last pre-match press conference here, but it'll be brought up in Australia again. This is going to surely follow you around during the World Cup.
I'm afraid it will follow me during my life, and that has been the agenda.
Have you spoken to the players since the most recent allegation regarding it?
I spoke with the leading players, they all said that they came individually to me, that they hold my back, is that right? My back. And that nobody I've asked specifically if they've ever experienced anything. And we're going to the World Cup. And they said, so they said, no, never. But we are going to what is so fantastic. We have we lost European Championships in Ukraine, and back then we were sitting in the dressing room saying to each other, whatever happens, we are going to the World Cup. And that bond, you've all been seeing and following, that has been so close, that this team deserves that we focus on the World Cup. They've done everything they could to get there. They do everything to be ready. And this distraction, the timing of it is wrong. And the allegations are false. That's all I want to say.
Katie, can I ask you, from as a captain and from the player's point of view, your reaction?
We've been so busy. I think even yesterday, when I think the off the ball stuff came out, we're coming from training back to dinner and then over to family house to meet the Taoiseach and the government. Of course, it's a real negative distraction, but for us, we're solely focused on what we have going forward. We have a game against one of the top 5 teams in the world tomorrow here in Tallaght Stadium against France. A massive send-off game in front of our home fans that I wasn't able to play 2 weeks ago, so I'm really looking forward to be able to lead out the girls tomorrow with that. And we've got a massive 4 or 5 weeks ahead of us in Australia. And for us, yes, of course, it's a lot of external noise, but our fully focused is on these next 2 weeks. And keeping together as a group.
And as a group, do you fully support Fearapo as your manager?
Yeah, we've built something over the last 2.5 years, you know. We've worked really hard together to contain the culture we have within the group, in terms of, on and off the pitch. We've had highs and we've had lows over the last few years. And our jobs as staff and as players is to put in high quality performances for our country, and that's what we're looking to do for the next few weeks.
So that was Vera Powell and Katie McCabe speaking to our own Tony O'Donoghue, who is still on the line. So Tony, just to move on, go on.
I just want to say as well, just as you asked me, like Katie went on to say, when she was asked, had anyone from the FAI spoken to her as a representative of the players? And she says that there has been constant dialogue and open dialogue. And she pointed out it wasn't always that way. There's been constant and open dialogue between the FAI executive, if you wish, and the players. And obviously this would be one of the issues that comes up. But I suppose, you know, there's an issue with Vera's contract. Vera has made it very clear that she is happy to be the Ireland manager and wants to continue. But the contract talks seem to have gone cold. Perhaps in the light of this, perhaps waiting to see how we do in the World Cup. If we do well in the World Cup and advance out of the group, it probably puts her in a stronger negotiating position. But maybe the FAI are you know, keeping their powder dry and waiting to see if any further allegations emerge in the coming weeks and months.
And you'd imagine there would be some sort of a review as well when they get that World Cup over. Tony, so just before we finish up on it, in general, like, what's the mood around the camp? You're very familiar with how they operate at this stage.
Well, as Katie left the stage today, the podium where she was hosting the press conference, she said, thanks for asking us about the World Cup, guys. Now, it was men and women reporters in the room. But it was almost like, you know, we're talking about this and not what we should be celebrating. Mm-hmm. And I think it is, I can imagine that this is what the players are talking about over dinner tonight. This is what the players are talking about in the hotel when they, you know, they'll have family around. I understand that the families of the players are meeting in the Castleknock Hotel for a big breakfast with the team. Perhaps that was this morning, actually, because I'm thinking they wouldn't do a big breakfast tomorrow. But, you know, there's been lots of things. Visit a family house, and they go on Friday. So it really is, you know, coming up quickly. And yet for this to dominate it, rather than what we hope will be, you know, a gala occasion here in Tallaght tomorrow, what we hope will be a good game for Ireland. It should be the strongest 11 that Vera Powell thinks we have, probably the same team, injury permitting, that she'll put out against Australia in the Olympic Stadium in a fortnight's time. That's what we're looking forward to. But this has been hanging over the preparations in the last few days since the new allegations emerged, like something of a shroud.
Yeah, I'd say so. All right, Rebecca Cray is with me here as well. Rebecca, I know you are friendly with some of the camp. How's everything there? Are they focused on the World Cup, or is this coming up?
Yeah, look, they're professional athletes, you know, the majority anyway, at least, you know, and I'm pretty sure they just want to get on the pitch and do their thing. You know, it's frustrating, and I feel the frustration for them that they have to, you know, acknowledge these things, and it's kind of following them around. And obviously, you know, this thing or these things came to light, I suppose, as early as January, when it was brought up. And I think it kind of been, you know, could have been, I should say, nipped in the bud at that stage. You know, maybe the likes of the FAI could have looked into it further, you know, with the current members of, you know, the playing squad and staff that are there with Barry, you know, and in our current tenure, just to see what's going on. You know, it's very easy, you know, if a manager comes to me and says, like that, you know, do you like me or am I doing okay? Of course you're going to say, yeah, everything's great, loving it, you know, especially when you know you've got a World Cup coming in, what, 6 months, 7 months? So look, my heart goes out to the girls for the fact that they, you know, just want to play football at the end of the day against a major side in France tomorrow to prep them for their trip on Friday. So look, hopefully they go out and do the business tomorrow and give us all a good show.
Well, Tony did ask Katie.
I just think it's worth saying that there's never been any suggestion of any impropriety with Vera around the Republic of Ireland squad. I mean, all these allegations are around her time with Houston Dash in 2018.
Yeah, well said, Tony. You did ask Katie as well about the France game. I do have a clip here. Let's hear it.
I mean, what an exciting game, right? It's massive to have France coming to town in front of our home fans, young girls coming, young boys coming to cheer us on, to see one of the best teams in the world. I definitely think they're going to be right up there in terms of World Cup favourites, the talent they have and the depth they have in their squad. And I think the flow they have right now, to Henry Renard coming back in and taking over, is something really that's exciting for them. We've looked at a lot of footage, they've got a bit of everything there. They're physical, they're quick, strong, and quite good in small areas in terms of passing. So we'll have to be on full alert tomorrow to make sure we can stop them and try to get positive results for our fans.
Tony, it is a glamour tie, isn't it?
Ah, it is. They're one of the best teams in the world. Semi-finalists at the Euros. They're ranked fifth, I think, 17 places higher than Ireland at the moment. A glamour team, you know, big personalities. So I think they're playing Australia after us. I mean, it'll be interesting to watch their progress through the World Cup as well. They have Brazil in their group, Panama and Jamaica as well. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it from that point of view. And I hope that this Ireland team can show their worth tomorrow, because, you know, we're looking at potentially home debuts for Sinead Farrelly and Marissa Shiva. We've seemed to have settled on an 11 now, with Kira Caruso playing up front. That's quite new. I mean, would never have played in Tala before, with Heather Payne probably playing in the right wing back position and Katie probably playing left wing back. But so you'd hope to think it's not experimental at this stage. We have the Colombia game over in Australia ahead of the real deal. And listen, fingers crossed that nobody gets injured tomorrow or in training. And Vera has prided herself on that. She's very proud of the fact that the whole squad fit him well ahead of tomorrow. Oh, she's all of them to choose from. And that, again, she feels is down to how you manage their load, the sports science. And in those regards, you know, she appears to have been doing an excellent job. That's why she talks about double standards, how male coaches and how they do their job is looked upon differently. She brought up the fact again that 226 female coaches experience the same thing as her and have, you know, lost their jobs in America. And so she feels that there should be a support for the coaches as well.
And Tony, just on the game, do you think we're going to see the way Vera Powell is going to play in the World Cup, or do you think she's going to hold a little bit back?
No, I don't think she's going to hold back. I think it's been building up to this. It's stronger opposition. She's had a track record of Ireland playing against better opposition, and it probably stood us in good stead when we needed to play against the Swedens, the Finlands, and even the Scotlands in the playoff. The games where we went through, the Germanys and the like, where we went through a long beaten run, a long run of games where we couldn't get a result, but we're building up to this, and now I think she'll start with her best team here in Tala tomorrow evening, and I'd imagine it would be the same team that starts against Australia, all being well and good.
Rebecca?
Yeah, much of the same. Look, it's going to be the strongest team out there. You know, France only beat Canada 2-1 there in the last game in April. So it'll be interesting to see what we're coming up against tomorrow, you know, with the fact obviously we've Canada in our own group. But yeah, look, be more of, you know, the new style of play that she's mentioned previously, you know, and the likes of Payne and bombing down that right. And I'm looking forward to seeing who she'll put in midfield, you know, if it's going to be Lily Ag or Ruth Littlejohn, if she's fit. And obviously the American, Irish-American girls, let's just say, that we have involved as well. So yeah, it's going to be a great occasion, no doubt.
Okay, Tony, I will see you in Tala tomorrow. We have live comms here on the programme. Thank you so much, Tony, for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Talk to you soon. Right, we're going to take a very quick break. Rebecca, stay with us, though, because I want to go through all of the day's football news.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Rebecca Cray is still with me in studio, and Fergal Brennan joins me on the line. How are things, Fergal?
Very good. And yourself?
Yeah, sure, good now. Yeah, looking forward to Ireland France tomorrow, I have to say. We just had a chat with Rebecca and Tony about that, so I'm going to move on to some football news. I'm going to start with Hannah Dingley, Fergal. So she has become the first woman to take charge of English football, of an English football league club. So she's the Forest Green caretaker boss, which is a big departure now to become the first woman to step up, and it feels like it's a big moment. Is it making big waves over your way?
It is. It feels like a big moment, and I think I speak for a lot of people in saying that I hope it does prove to be a big moment in terms of changes towards these type of appointments, because she's well connected with the club. She's worked in the academy for I think about 3 or 4 seasons. She's very highly rated within the club, within local circles around Forest Green, and the fans know her quite well. She has quite a good relationship with the club and the ownership, and Forest Green obviously have a reputation for trying to break barriers and trying to do things differently to other clubs, particularly League One, League Two level, where there is a kind of tendency to stick with the norms and don't try something too radical or too different, because it can not pay off. I think part of the decision to bring her in, and particularly in terms of how it will be anticipated for next season, is the person that she's replacing, which was Duncan Ferguson. And he came in, really poor return. He won one game in 4 months. And I think from what the owner said today, he kind of made a bit of a dart towards that in saying that here's an example of an individual that, if you're to believe what has been the idea around professional football for so long, Duncan Ferguson should be a success. He's managed at Premier League level, former Premier League and international player, and he was really, really bad. So Hannah fully deserves this chance. And I just think with the World Cup coming up in the next few weeks, and then obviously the WSL season starting after that, there is a huge amount of positive change in the right direction being made. We all just hope that it continues and that it is sustainable, because the World Cup, as I say, in the next couple of weeks will put women's football on another level of platform in terms of international audiences. But this is an important decision that's been made at a domestic level in England.
Rebecca, sometimes these things just have to happen for it to become normal. So it's like a female referee taking a men's game, or a female official's been on the line, or whatever it is. And you would hope, anyway, that this is going to be one of those cases that she'll do the job, it'll go well, and then we might see several women popping up in manager roles. That might be me being optimistic, though.
Yeah, most definitely. Look, it's groundbreaking, I think, for the game. You know, you mentioned yourself with officials and things like that coming into the men's game recently, which has been fantastic. And look, she's obviously got the, you know, the qualifications behind her, and she's you know, had a good tenure at the club itself. And I was just only reading an article about it there earlier on, that she, you know, actually tried to play herself and then, you know, was banned from playing for a number of years just because of the rule back in the day. And to see obviously the journey she's had to now, you know, be managing a professional English men's side is fantastic. And you look at the likes of Emma Hayes, you know, who I'm sure would be well able to do just the same. So look, hopefully it's a step in the right direction and not just a kind of token appointment for the fact that we've got the Women's World Cup kicking off this summer.
Yeah, good. It is good press now, so look, hopefully it isn't just that, if you're being cynical. Fergal, the Emma Hayes one is interesting because she was linked with Wimbledon, if I'm correct, and didn't fancy it, didn't see it as a step up, felt that she was, the role that she was in now was exactly where she wanted to be, and didn't see moving into the men's game at that level as a step forward.
Yeah, she's been linked with a couple of roles at a Championship and League One level, and looking at her CV, looking at the way, particularly in terms of media appearances, not just the success that she's had at Chelsea, but when you actually get an opportunity to hear her speaking about football tactics, the way that she sets teams up, her analysis of other teams that she'll be covering for television, she's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I fully think if she was to be offered a role in the men's game, she'd be a success. But I think also within this, in terms of her position at Chelsea, that's where she feels that she is best achieving her objectives in her career. That is her call to make in terms of what she wants to do next. But I think she probably would be the breakthrough that you would see, probably for a Championship, maybe for Premier League level in the years to come, because she's kind of seen as the face of the WSL in terms of being a manager. And obviously the level that she's got Chelsea to, obviously she's a well-known face within football media in the UK as well. So I would like to see her do it, but ultimately she's well aware of the lie of the land in terms of, do I want this kind of tag attached to me if I make that move? I've built something pretty special here. I want to continue evolving that. But she's definitely someone that I personally would like to see do it. But ultimately the call comes down to her.
Let's move on to PSG. Luis Enrique has been appointed as the new manager there. He probably doesn't inherit as many divas as he thought. But still, it's going to be a tricky one for him to go in there and try and deliver success, which isn't winning the French League. It's trying to get them further on in the Champions League.
It is. The kind of brief at PSG hasn't changed one bit, depending on whoever the manager is over the last few years. Win the Champions League, that's it. They know that Ligue 1 is not quite a formality, but is pretty close to that. Even in the difficult years, they've always finished there or thereabouts. And I think they've only missed one or two titles since the Qatari buyout. Luis Enrique, I think since Carlo Ancelotti, is the only manager to have won the Champions League previously before coming into PSG. But it's curious the contract that they've given him as well. I think it's only 2 years, which again shows this idea that the club themselves, the ownership, are not committed to a long-term project, as it were, in Paris. They just want that trophy, because so much of the model has been built around, we want to win that. Which players do we need to bring in? Bring them in. Which manager do we need? Bring them in. And it hasn't worked. I think Luis Enrique is a superb manager. I really do. The type of character that he is, particularly that we saw at the World Cup with his Twitch channel, and the fact that he's quite unorthodox in the way that he operates in certain ways. I was surprised. I thought maybe he would be looking at a different position, but this has come up. Christophe Galtier has been sacked, and there's obviously a bit of controversy surrounding him in the last few weeks. I do really like Luis Enrique, but I don't think anything will change at PSG until there's a culture change. I think Enrique will improve that, but I still think there's too many variables floating around for just one person to come in, fix it, and win the Champions League.
Will Mbappe still be there?
Well, this is a very interesting one that has developed today, and the club owner has come out and effectively said, our position as a club has not changed. He has a year left on his contract. The clause to extend it to 25 needs to be activated before the end of July. Mbappe has always said to the club that he wouldn't leave on a free transfer. He's now indicated that he won't sign that clause, which would mean that from January 24, he can negotiate a free transfer. The difficulty for PSG is if they follow through on this idea of, we won't let you leave for free. The owners call him the best player in world football right now, which he arguably is. Who has got €200 million rolling around to shell out for him? Because Real Madrid have been planning for him for years, but I think they were hoping that they could just wait, just leave it on the back burner until January and then get it sorted, and probably behind closed doors already have it sorted, but formally from January. This now changes it, but the difficulty is they won't lower their asking price because of who he is, and there's not really many people that are going to come forward with that money. So it's an interesting position to be in. And I think so much of it comes down to wages. There could be a few more twists and turns, but I just think nobody at the moment has that money to pay out.
Yeah, it's huge money. Manchester United announced Mason Mount. Is this going to be a match made in heaven or hell, do you think?
Probably somewhere in between. I do think he's a very good player, and I think he'll be an addition to them. And the mess that had gone on at Chelsea for the last 12 months, he's unfortunately found himself trapped in that. And he's always been quite consistent for them. And certainly up until prior to last season, he was a really important player under Thomas Tuchel. In terms of the money that's been paid and what United need, I think he'll add to it. Will he be a one-man band to put them back into the title race? No, they still need 2, 3, 4 players. They need a goalkeeper. They need a striker for a start. But I do think he's a really good player, and it's a very strange situation because he's been connected with Chelsea for so long. To see him not wearing a blue shirt next season will be a little bit odd. But I think he'll add to them, and he'll improve them, take a bit of the weight off certain players in the midfield. But they need more players. They need definitely, as I say, a goalie and a striker, and they need the ownership situation to be settled.
There's an interesting story unfolding here in Ireland at the moment. I'm not sure if it crossed your radar, but Rory Higgins, the Derry City manager, has been linked with Barnsley. Now, this is just a reported link, so we're not sure, but he is, everybody knows, really well got as a coach. He's highly regarded by many people, so no surprise to hear that he's in demand then.
No, not at all. And there's been a bit of a kind of domino situation of managers, Russell Martin going to Southampton and then Michael Duff leaving Barnsley to go to Swansea. And the position is vacant. And Barnsley, it was so, so close for them last season. I think it was 123rd, 124th minute. They conceded a goal in the League One playoff final. And then it was heartbreak. And then it's back to League One. They were that close to being in the Championship, and then maybe Michael Duff would have stayed. In terms of Rory coming in, I think he's obviously, as you say, he's very highly regarded in Ireland. He's done well with Derry City. They've been on an upward curve since he's come into the position. It's a jump in terms of a different type of pressure that he'd be facing at Barnsley, because they were so close to promotion last season. If he comes in, a lot of the fans will be of the mindset of, right, we want that again. And it's a slog. League One to the Championship, the Championship to the Premiership is really, really difficult. It's no surprise that he has been linked, because he's a very capable coach. But it'll be a big call for him to make, because he has to make sure that the situation is right that he's walking into, and that he's got at least a chance to pick up where Duff left off last season.
Rebecca, if they start, or if managers start moving across the water, would you be worried now they might come and take Damien Duff?
I don't know about that. He seems to tell us, Ashels, that he's pretty settled. So you never know, though. You never know.
Right. Fergal, thank you so much for joining us and for all of those updates. We're going to take a really quick break. Stay with us. We will be looking at all of the ladies' football news. And we do have that Softball World Cup chat to come to.
Game on.
QFM. Welcome back. I am delighted to say that we are joined by Waterford legend Michelle Ryan to talk about all of the ladies' football quarterfinals. Michelle, we were dealt some great ones, I have to say. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. Yeah, we have been. I mean, first thing I thought when I looked at the draws that were made was we have some serious action ahead of us. Some real matchups that are really going to whet the appetite for the semi-final and final. And I think when we see, first of all, who came out of the groups, I mean, I suppose there wasn't any surprise as to who the top 8 teams were going to be. But I think not many of us would have predicted who would have going to finish in first position in all of those groups. And, you know, it was Kerry, Armagh, Galway and Donegal in the end. And maybe some of us might have been saying, you know, Mayo being All-Ireland semi-finalists last year, we're likely to top that group. Cork had been coming good and Galway had been disappointing in the league and had lost the Connacht final. And then I don't know, did anyone see maybe Barry Nadine Doherty or Donegal topping that group after their first half of the
big
year?
Big time.
Absolutely. And it was Meath ended up being in second spot. But look, we have some incredible pairings coming up in about 10, 12 days' time.
And it's quite interesting because when you look at the teams that are left, of course, they're all going to have eyes on silverware. But two that were drawn out together, Kerry and Meath, that they would be the ones that would really think they're going to go the whole way.
Yeah, you have to say that. I suppose, look, the question marks are still a little bit there with regards to me. Mm-hmm. And I suppose the topsy-turvy start they had to the year. But in fairness, since Jenny Rispin came in and their first performance against Waterford, which was pretty comprehensive, and you know, put in a good performance again against Donegal, and they have kind of settled back into what I would probably consider their structure that was working for them over the last 2 years, and being a little bit more steadying the ship, and that counter-attacking pace being back in there. I don't think they're running as smooth though as mm-hmm. they have been the last 2 years, and that's maybe where the questions are for me. And what a match to start us off with against Kerry then, who really are on the up and up, and their only glitches being the All-Ireland final against Meath last
exactly,
year
yeah,
and
yeah.
they've fallen to Cork twice this year, you know, so. But they are scoring aplomb in every single game, and they are exciting to watch. And I think watching them come together at this early stage here now of the knockout is going to be incredible.
Yeah, it really will. And just some brilliant, brilliant matchups. And I think when you do look at the four games and the teams that have ended up playing each other now in these games, you really get a sense of the quality that there is. And it's great to have a championship where you don't have one team out on front. You don't think, right, looking at this team is definitely going to win. Like, anybody could win it, really. Galway having to play Mayo, and I think it's probably because of the two Connacht, the Connacht connection. You think that they play each other quite a lot.
You do, yeah, and that is true. It is true, but I suppose that kind of even adds to the spice of it. They had mm-hmm. it in the men there a few weeks ago. It's back here again now in the ladies as well. And I suppose it is a home game for Galway, which is important. It's important for both sides there because Mayo had an up and down league, and before they beat Laois last weekend, they'd only won, including Laois last weekend, sorry, they won four games in total this year. Now, interestingly, all those four games were at home in McHale Park. So they're out of McHale Park now for this in this crunch game against Galway. And they will be wanting to repeat the Connacht final because they hadn't won that in so long. So they have that recent victory over Galway. But I suppose the interesting thing about Galway is Galway bet what I would have felt was a fancy Cork side in the first round of the championship. And, you know, they finished that game well. They held out. They were able to hold off that kind of coming of Cork at the very end. But they were stronger, it seems, all over the pitch. So I think that's going to be a very close battle. And having seen Mayo up close against Laois last week, they are really mm-hmm. working very effectively up and down that pitch. So that's, I mean, it's a hard one to call. I think maybe for me personally, I think Mayo might slightly edge that one. And I think Kerry might edge the first one as well. But again, this is very small margins between these teams.
Cork and Armagh. Are Cork coming good at the right time, do you think?
I think they have been, and I said that leading into the championship because, again, look, they didn't qualify for the league final at all, but they were coming good from the end of the league. Actually, it was funnily enough, Kerry were already qualified and Cork ended up beating Kerry, and that kind of seemed to kick them on a little mm-hmm. bit. And then they had more than a convincing Munster campaign, and that's where my questions came in for Kerry when they weren't performing in Munster as well as they've been performing everywhere else. Now, they've since then answered that, but I do think Cork have been building nicely. It was a setback to lose against Galway in that first game, no doubt. And I suppose the question I have now is, you know, they've had a lot of, I suppose, news in the last few weeks and preparations in regards to the whole ladies football and the camogie and all that. Ciara O'Sullivan got a red card last week against Tipperary. Whether or not she's going to be able to appeal that successfully is going to be a big call there as well. So Armagh finishing top of that group, finishing that game really well against Mayo, you know, Amy Mackin having missed a penalty early in the game to come off, stand up and score a penalty then to win the game by 2 points. I think Armagh will be going into this full of confidence and might just pip Cork, even though Cork were a team I would have been tipping at the start of the championship. I think maybe just they might have their house a little bit more in order.
What about Dublin then? Just coming up against a Donegal team that have surprised everybody except, as you said, Nadine.
Yes, that's it, exactly. I don't know what they're up there in Donegal, but look, I think this is going to be a fantastic game. And these two teams always produce major battles, and that's the thing. And Donegal, I mean, I think we can just disregard the first half of this year with regards to Donegal. And I suppose the question is whether that was always their intention or not. And if it was, well, then fair play to Maxi Curran, because they've turned up in the championship and in the Ulster championship, winning that as well. and they have a mix of, I suppose, the more experienced and the really younger players mixing in very well. And I mean, you have a young girl in there in Abigail Temple-Asoko in full back and holding her own in there, and people that likes the Katie Dowds and the keeper Claire Friel. So, and they're definitely moving that ball with a lot more pace and a lot more purpose and being a lot more productive up front with it. And even with that, we still have the likes of Karen Guthrie there, who's not featuring for the full 60 minutes. Shirley McLaughlin came back in as a sub, name number 29 against Waterford a few weeks. Whether or not she features is the question. But I think Dublin have just been preparing nice and quietly. There hasn't been too much about them, and they've been getting the job done. And I think maybe, just as I said, with everyone focusing on the likes of Meath and Kerry and maybe even Cork in the last while, Dublin are not going away and they're building nicely. And I think they might overall, on the bench and starting 15, have a bit too much for Donegal in 2 weeks' time.
We'll have Nadine going through these in a few days as well. Next week, she will take us through how she thinks it's all going to go. And just before we let you go, Michelle, just yesterday, the captains of the men's inter-county football and hurling teams released a joint statement voicing their support for the ongoing protest by our female Gaelic Games players. How important was it to get this solidarity from their male counterparts?
I think it was hugely important, and I can't really underline that enough, because like I suppose the initial statements were effective, and then the fact that they've been built on, I suppose, week in week, and you know, they're it's been kept newsworthy, it's been kept notable, and it really is taking the attention of people, whether it's the media or whether the public. And I've been at the games when these things have been happening, and the support of the crowd every time this happens, it is quite remarkable. But then to have our male counterparts kind of coming on board and showing this solidarity and this strong statement, I think it really just gives us that, even that little bit more power behind it all, because we all of us who've played camogie and ladies football, all since we were small, we all have regarded ourselves as one family, because generally it was our entire family who was playing these games, and we saw ourselves as no different. And it only became different when you went on to play, I suppose, and in higher and adult grades and in venues that maybe then became not as available to you as before, and then in county teams, expenses and so on. And maybe I'm glad to say the coverage has absolutely improved. But you did notice those differences. And while, you know, statements and maybe quiet talk among people in small groups is great, here we have something public now from our male counterparts, and you would hope that then, you know, this gets listened to, because they're not just calling on the public, they're not getting the public attention, they're also calling explicitly on the GAA to focus in on this, and, you know, dismissing the fact that this is just a ladies football and a camogie problem. And I think by this way this has panned out over the last number of weeks, it's clear this is a very organized protest. So if the associations are not willing to at least show that they're listening and maybe put something in, it doesn't have to be, I suppose, the absolute ultimate that's put in place in the next week or two. We've only 5 or 6 weeks left of the Ladies Football Camogie campaign. But that there's some attempts there to listen, that maybe then, you know, we won't see as much of this protest. But if there's not, it does seem that this is going to escalate week after week.
Absolutely interesting times ahead. Michelle, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a quick break, but do stay with us. We'll be talking to Melanie Cunningham, Ireland head coach of the women's softball team.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is time to turn our attention to softball, and I'm delighted to say that Melanie Cunningham, the head coach of the Irish softball team, joins us now on the line. How are you, Melanie?
I'm good, thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. We have you on the line because Ireland is hosting the Women's Softball World Cup in Balbriggan very, very shortly. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, yeah, so it's actually technically the first group stage of the World Cup. It's a kind of two-part process, as most of us in sports are familiar with. So we're hosting five other countries besides ourselves. So we have Great Britain, Australia, the USA, Botswana, and Chinese Taipei. So it'll take place from the 11th to the 15th in Balbriggan at Braemore Castle. So we'd be delighted if people come out and give some support.
So not everybody would be very familiar with softball. I've heard of it, but I've never really seen it played. Is it big in Ireland? Like, how did you form a team? Tell us all about that.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, Ireland's been around for quite a few years, about 30 years or more. It became really big kind of in the 90s when a lot of the American companies were here. And, you know, I think there's about 30 or 40 teams playing around the country. There's teams in Belfast, Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Galway. But what we play is kind of the Olympic version, which is called fast pitch. And so quite similar to baseball, where the pitcher throws the ball hard overhand, we throw the ball really hard underhand to the batter to hit. And some of the top pitchers can throw 70 to 75 miles an hour. So It can be quite an intense experience to play. So we started the program here in 2014 for the Olympic version. And so we're pushing to get into 2028 in Los Angeles.
Are we good at it, Melanie?
We are good at it. For a program that started in 2014, we're already number 17 in the world. So I think, you know, we've really come a long way in a short period of time.
And where do you get your players from? Like, is it homegrown players? Is it players that from American companies working here? Like, what's the background, the general background?
Yeah, so the current squad that's taking place in the World Cup, most of them are Irish heritage players. A few of them were born here in Ireland, but their families moved away when they were quite young. So almost the entire team is heritage players. But we do, for our under-18 kind of high-performance youth academy, we have some Irish-based players here. So mostly given from the fact that their parents played softball or baseball here in Ireland, and they've kind of, you know, grown up watching it and are ready to take part themselves.
So do you have big expectations now heading into this?
Yeah, so only the top two teams qualify, and you know, I think if we get the right amount of support from the fans, I think we have a great chance of finishing second or third, but we'll need everyone behind us to get there. So
this is a call out for people. If you're have a bit of spare time, head along.
Yeah, I don't think I've been subtle about that. Yeah, absolutely. Please come support.
So in terms then of the competition, like who are the big nations in this?
Oh, well, USA, definitely. They're not only are they world number one, but they're the reigning Olympic silver medalists. And Chinese Taipei, I think, is number three in the world, and Australia is in the top 10. So we really do have some steep competition, and GB is number 16. So, but in general, worldwide, it tends to kind of split between USA, Japan, Canada, Australia. They tend to kind of be in the top four or five almost every year.
And what about you, Melanie? How did you get this role?
Yeah, I think a little happenstance. So, I mean, I grew up playing it in the States, and I've lived in Ireland like 20 years now. So I was kind of approached about the idea of starting a fast pitch program here. And, you know, if we could get it off going. And I said, sure, why not? Because, you know, who isn't crazy enough to try new things like that? So there we go.
Brilliant. It sounds great. And yeah, definitely. If anybody is looking for something to do, where can they find the information and buy the tickets and all the rest, Melanie?
Absolutely. So if they go to our website, it's just softballwcireland.com, and there's the link to the tickets and the schedules. For the most part, to make it easy for Irish fans to come out, we've scheduled all the Ireland games around 6:30 in the evening. So hopefully people will be able to make it up and check out the action.
Great. And that is all of next week.
Yes, exactly. The 11th to the 15th.
Perfect. Melanie, thank you so much and best of luck. You'll have to come back on now and tell us how you got on.
Absolutely, Marie. We'd appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Great, thank you. Well, that is all Bye. We have time for here on the programme tonight. Rebecca, thank you so much for sticking around with me for the hour. I'll be back tomorrow from Tala. Shane will be here in studio.